And I had the story all figured out, and then I saw Livingston's little bio on the kiosk. Okay, this is, of course, this is the president of the Lutheran Church, and this is like a bishop, okay? And he starts out, I like cartoons. I like VeggieTales. And I thought, no wonder Ben loves this guy. Ben, as a kid, he didn't mind working hard, but he always had to know if there was going to be time to play. And he also was very, he had this huge imagination. And probably it's a little bit my fault, because, you know, I like to read, Farside, Gary Larson and Farside cartoons, where you kind of see things from the upside down version. So, any school teachers here? We got some elementary school teachers. What grade is it when you practice that writing the alphabet, you know, the worksheets with A and B? What grade is that? Okay, well, Ben was at that grade point, and he comes home from school, and he says to me, he says, Dad, we're supposed to be writing D's today, and I wrote upside down P's, and the teacher never knew the difference. those of you who know Ben, that's Ben, right? There's just always a little bit of trickster in him. And so, I have to apologize that yesterday I did a video, Psalm of Sorrow. Okay, this is one that we talked about. We're going to use that one and put some pictures to it. For Ben and his music, of course, he had all kinds of music. He had playful music, he had lots of love songs. We wonder where all those came from sometimes. And then, of course, he also had just a deep drive to witness his faith through his music. But he didn't want to do Christian music. He wanted music that would be accessible to anybody and yet bring in the message. So sometimes, you know, as we're looking at it, and of course he's dead, so I can't call him up and say, Ben, what is this really about here? You have to kind of figure out. So the song Psalm of Sorrow that we did yesterday, April was kind of complaining to me this morning about I used the wrong version of the song because it was an earlier recording and he had changed the text because it wasn't communicating. The message of the faith that he intended that song to carry. So a lot of the songs he kept massaging him. So when I go home, I gotta redo all that stuff and maybe call up my son-in-law, Peter, who can actually do that kind of thing. I finally figure out how to turn on the computer, hook up to the projector. This has been a growth week for me. So anyway, Ben's faith was always in everything he did, but a lot of times it was upside down, playful and kind of seeping in. Okay.
Well, with powers on. That was part of the prelude. Every day we're doing the prelude. This is our session.
These are pictures from the time in Haiti. Teaching time.
Now this is.
These pictures are mostly from when Ben, Renee, and John were in Haiti right before the earthquake, at the time of the earthquake. This one, there's a few of them that were taken before, but Pastor Livingston here, they had organized that they would come down and teach Lutheran theology with the pastors and leaders of the Lutheran churches in Haiti. So many of the pictures you see here are from the days right prior to the earthquake.
Thank you.
Tom Witt tells me we don't need the mic, and the reason I use it is because I have a hearing challenge now as I get older, and I know what it's like when you're just barely hearing. So I hope this helps you. And that's why I got a second mic try to use for you to speak, just because I am sensitive to people just kind of barely hearing or hearing most of it, but not quite all of it. So let's take a look. I don't know if we can get any lights here, because I really need to have you look at your Bibles with me. And let me say a few things. I forgot to mention yesterday about, sometimes I think I need something to write on, not because I do it, but because I walk over and then I just sort of make gestures of something I'm going to write. But anyway, Lamentations has, it's just an absolutely gorgeous book for those of you who can read Hebrew. And some of us could maybe read Hebrew right after seminary, and now I really don't read it now, and I'm sure there are people in the room that have kept it up. But it's an absolutely, it's artfully done, it's a beautiful book, it's poetry. We miss most of it. Every single one of these chapters here begin with this poetry that goes through the whole alphabet, acrostic, laying it out. And the first one, chapter one, has 66 lines, and it begins every verse, the 22 verses, begins with a letter of the alphabet in order. Kathleen O'Connor thinks that probably the reason that there is this orderly piece that's going on in Lamentations, and the first two chapters, it does the 66 lines, the 22, the first one is 22 verses beginning, going right down the alphabet, and we completely miss it, of course, in the English. Her theory is that somehow there is some order to this absolute chaos that the people of God are living in, and the destruction of Jerusalem. But I don't want to emphasize too much the destruction of Jerusalem, because this has become, this poem, this poetry, these metaphors, these images that are in Lamentations can be used for anybody. There is a place. I know we don't get to hear it very much on Sunday morning. You're not going to hear it very much in the lectionary, but we have a place to bring sorrow in our lives. And it is so raw here that we can find accompaniment from the community of faith that articulate our sorrow and our pain and name it out loud. This is really a searing book, and it's scary to read. I thought nobody would come back today. Chapter one, and everybody's gone. Well, maybe my relatives will show up. So first of all, I just want to say thank you for your courage. Just come back and take another look at Lamentations. And I hope even that I would dare to say it, I hope that you would make it part of your life. Right over here.
One other aspect of that alphabet.
Yes.
We are mourning and in mourning from A to Z. A complete.
Perfect. Alphabet. Yes, and that's another comment that some scholars have made. Absolutely true. Some have seen it as that very A to Z complete. Are you a Lamentations scholar?
No.
Not a scholar, but a reader. Yes, good for you. Thank you. We don't have the mic ready, but...
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay, did you want to say that again? I tried to repeat it, but did you get it? Okay. You want to say more? Go ahead. Give it to us.
Go ahead. That's all right.
I think you said it well, that we are in mourning and we are facing things that are so bad.
Yep.
It's from A to Z.
Right.
It's complete.
Absolutely.
Our mourning is complete.
And I think this, you know, some of the Lamentation scholars would argue very, very deeply that if we go into Lamentations, that in fact, it doesn't do navel gazing. It does exactly the opposite. It releases you for compassion to others. As long as we're in denial about our sorrows in our life, and they are
I've never met, I can say this as a pastor, I've never met a human being that doesn't have great sorrow in their lives. They may or may not be willing to talk to me about it, but sometimes you just get smidgens and you think, oh my goodness, how have they even survived? But as we can enter our sorrow, the argument would be for those who have gone deeply as scholars into Lamentations, their argument would be this opens us up into compassion and empathy that I think particularly in this dominant culture we do not have. We are so into denial. I mean, I just thought about it just about 2 weeks ago as I was continuing to work on Lamentations. And I realized that there are messages on my phone that I just haven't been able to erase. And I finally realized, it starts with Rafael, Puerto Rican. Number two is, now some of them I've erased in between. There's ones that I just haven't been able to erase. Number two is Bishop Muniz calling me from Jerusalem and reminding Judd and I that he's calling us from the city of resurrection. He says, I have no words to say, but I remind you that I'm calling you from the place of our Lord's resurrection. That's his second message. And then the rabbi I talked about, who asked that she could pray for us in our synagogue. And then after that is Louis, and he's with us. And Louis and some of the people you're meeting in wellness, who's an incredible dancer and teacher of dance, dug out our son. And then former president and bishop of the church in Peru, which is our companion. And then Waxinium, and also Nagiri, who's the now bishop of the church in Ethiopia, but was a baby bishop with me when we both started out at about the same time as companions. I'm forgetting some, but these are just global voices and persistent in reaching us. And my experience with my global brothers and sisters have been, for some reason that I cannot explain, it's not always true, but, and then I was thinking about Wyvetta was another one that I just haven't been able to, Bullock, who's African-American in church, but they just seem to know about sorrow and don't seem to be afraid of it. Loxium spent 15 minutes on the phone with me, and then he felt like it wasn't enough, so he called again and spent another 15 minutes, and he just had to reach me, and it's very hard. Ethiopians, very hard for them to get you on the phone. I mean, their phones don't work most of the time. So this is just, I just say this because I really think we have a struggle in our culture. Those of us who come from this North American culture, we really struggle with denial of sorrow, death. We know we do this, but I think we struggle with anything we can't fix. And what we hear are then these voices. We hear the voice of the narrator, who is this monotone journalist. Oh, look at all these people, you know, there's bones everywhere here and there, da, 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 but they're just kind of dispassionate voice. And then Jerusalem, as the daughter of Zion, crying out, breaking in, interrupting. Look at me, God, I'm not even asking you to change the destruction of my city. I'm not even asking you right now to change what you've done, but simply notice us. You're not noticing us. Look, the look word keeps coming back. And then this litany again and again and again in the first chapter, there is no one to comfort you. No one. Comfort you again and again and again, that litany. Well, let's look at chapter 2.
April.
Ah.
I have a question.
Sure.
Yesterday and today, and I struggled with it last night thinking about your discussion yesterday and talking about God not looking, not seeing, not being present. But my question as a parent is, how times have we had to let our children pitch fits and scream at us that they hate us or we don't love them in order for them to get over what you're starting, I think, to touch on, is that deep, intimate pain. So is God really ignoring, or is he giving us the tools or the experiences to fully live into life in his grace? And that is a question that I have for
you. I think that you can, what are our scholars trying to get us to do? Our teachers, some of these teachers are in this room, they try to get us to interpret a text within the text. So right now, the first task would be to try to interpret Lamentations with Lamentations. That's not easy because it's pretty rugged. And there's a lot of voices. And one of the things I keep thinking about is I'm looking at Lamentations. There is no voice. Now, our church has pulled out the voice in chapter 3, the one little few verses of hope. Our church loves it. So we use that in Good Friday, and you never hear the rest of Lamentations. But that is one voice, not the primary voice. It's kind of like Holden. Holden lifts up and really celebrates. I don't think it's in their mission, but I just hear it all the time. The priesthood of believers, the multiple voices, trying to get people to bring their gifts forward at Holden. And you really see it in Lamentations. There are multiple witnesses, testimonies in the New Testament. Whenever you see the word testimony or witness, and there's probably an exception out there, but I haven't found it yet, I just look it up. Whenever I see in English the word witness or testimony, I look it up, and it's so far always been the word, the Greek word martyr. When we think of martyr, we think you have to die. But the scriptures keeps using that Greek word martyr to say witness, testimony. Here in this Hebrew text, we have these witnesses coming forward. I'm not really addressing your question, but I am aware of your question. But I just want to say, I think the Lamentation we want to try with some discipline today, although I keep sneaking in other texts, with some discipline to kind of enter in the Lamentations. But we have the entire witness of Scripture, and then you're totally right. We have... one of them is 2nd Isaiah, which we love. We do 2nd Isaiah, you know, throughout the church year. We love it, especially in Advent, and it has hope. And so, no, you're exactly right. So I think your question is, could God be listening but not speaking? Good. Hold it. It's good. It's really good. Okay, this is just rich and we are just going to rush here, but let's look at chapter 2. And here we have a change of heart in the narrator that has been sort of the distant journalist observing and seeming to have no compassion and even being quick to say probably, Zion, you have deserved it. And as you remember, daughter Zion, Jerusalem said, you know what, God? You have done absolutely terrible things to us, and we deserve it. I should just mention this very quickly. Cities were destroyed so often in ancient times that more than Israel, just developed what we call a city lament. And so it was often used as a woman would be personified as the one who was the mother who was losing her children, the widow, the one who's raped, the whole piece. The city is personified as a woman, and usually it was a relationship between the city and the city's God who had just lost out. Well, of course, these are people of the Jewish faith, so that the city lament doesn't work completely, but it's close. It's close. So, okay, chapter 2, let's take a look at that. Remember the last verse you heard in chapter 1 is, they heard how I was groaning with no one to comfort me. And my enemies are so glad, God, that you have done this to me. They're just celebrating. And that's not the last verse, but in the next verse up there, And then we want, just we can just dump this stuff right away because as Christians we know we're not supposed to be for retribution. So let's just get rid of these texts and let's never read them. But I'm going to tell them really, this is a really safe and simple story. But I can remember how my husband and I, we were in a congregation which was just, you know, it had a couple decades of kind of abusing their part-time secretary. And they would always have the office in their home, and everybody would bring stuff all week and call them up and say, I don't want to write the announcement, you write the announcement. And so this person who was paid for 5 hours would do like 25 hours a week. And finally, of course, the pastors are trying to alleviate this situation and somehow get it into some little bit more just situation, get the office into the church and have some kind of a distance for this person so they're not abused. Well, she finally moves on to a much better job through a lot of encouragement with their pastors for her leadership gifts. Somebody else comes in, and we had to, you know, do a special visit and talk to her about not standing up and opposing, because she wanted the next person to be abused as much as she was. It was a very normal reaction. What do we call this? We call this freshman. Yeah, I suffered. It was humiliating. I was humiliated off the charts. So now you get to be humiliated. This is a very normal thing. We all do it. And this person says, all the bad stuff you have done to me, God, do it to my enemies. Except for nobody in this room would be like that, but that's what's going on. Okay, here we go. Chapter 2. Let's read it. Where's the mic?
We're over here. Okay. We'll go around the back row to Pastor Livingston and then come back this way rather than right to Corey.
And remember, if you don't want to do it, just pass it. So nobody will even notice.
Chapter 2, verse 1.
Here we go. And I'll stop you once in a while. Here we go.
How hath the Lord covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger and cast down from heaven unto the earth the beauty of Israel and remembered not his footstool in the day of his anger.
And all these things are so totally loaded here, but what does it mean when God doesn't remember? I mean, what do we even do in the Lord's Supper? I mean, this remembrance, this always God remembers is, you know, you're not remembering anymore. Huge. Okay, second verse.
The Lord has destroyed without mercy all the dwellings of Jacob, and his wrath has broken down the strongholds of daughter Judah. He has brought down to the ground in dishonor the kingdom and its rulers.
I'm just going to stop for a second here because we have in the Magnificat, which we sing every night in Vespers across for centuries, across the globe, we have this wonderful image of those who are in power who brought down. But here it's a very, very difficult image, how the people of God have been brought down. I want to just point out to you that when you see destroyed in the NRSV, the Lord is destroyed, that word in the Hebrew is swallowed up. I don't know why we don't use that word, because it's very powerful. The Lord has swallowed up without mercy. And you'll see it again in a few verses. Okay, keep going.
He has cut down in fierce anger all the might of Israel. He has withdrawn his right hand from them. In the face of the enemy, he has burned like the flaming fire in Jacob, consuming all around. He has bent his bow like an enemy, with his right hand set like a foe. He has killed all in whom we took pride. In the tent of daughter Zion, he has poured out his fury like fire.
I'm just going to pause for a second. Look with you on verse 3. He has withdrawn his right hand from them. We have this wonderful hymn towards the end of the ELW, the right hand of God. I mean, we have such an understanding, I think, in the scriptures, both in the New Testament and the Old Testament, about the right hand of God. So withdrawing his right hand. What does that mean to you? Power and
protection.
Protection, and the goats are on the left, and the sheep are on the right. Okay.
Is this discrimination against left-handers?
Here we go. Keep going.
Well, we're actually singing the right hand of God for worship tonight, so that's very appropriate.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, can
good.
Sing that tonight.
Wow.
Verse 5, the Lord has become like an enemy. He has destroyed Israel. He has destroyed all its palaces, laid in ruins its strongholds, and multiplied in daughter Judah mourning and lamentation.
Multiplied mourning and lamentation.
Go on. He has broken down his booth like garden. He has destroyed his tabernacle. The Lord has abolished in Zion festival and Sabbath, and in his fierce indignation has spurned king and priest.
The Lord has scorned his altar, disowned his sanctuary. He has delivered into the hand of the enemy the walls of her palaces. A clamor was raised in the house of the Lord as on a day of festival.
Can you just take a second here and tell me what you're thinking about what is being swallowed up here, what is being destroyed? In verse 5, the Lord has become like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all its palaces. God doesn't give a hoot about the Sabbath. What is the Sabbath in the Old Testament?
The temple,
but it talks about the festivals, and it talks about scorn his altar, disowned his sanctuary. The Lord has abolished in Zion festival and Sabbath, it says in verse, second half of 6. Huge. Talk to me about that.
Like a giant temper tantrum. Like a huge, you know, like God is just absolutely in a furious rage in destroying his own places and the places where we see the Lord.
I don't even know how we get at this as far as us as Christians, because the temple and the Sabbath and the Torah, that's it. That's God. When we, it'd be like throwing out Jesus for Christians. I mean, it's massive. I don't even know how to get my head around this over here.
Well, the Sabbath was the day of rest after all of creation. The Sabbath is the day of rest after all of our work. The festival of the booths is the autumn festival of the harvest, where you build the booth and you sit in it in the evening. You enjoy all the harvest fruits and gifts. All of that's destroyed. The fruit of our labor is destroyed. We're worth nothing.
That's great. And before I go to another comment here, I just want to take, you know, look at Exodus. This is God's deliverance. I mean, the two big things in the Old Testament, exile and Exodus, right? We know that. I'm going to look at the Exodus, because what does Moses keep saying to Pharaoh over and over and over again? It's quoting God, let my people go that they may worship me. We sing the song, going on Moses, let my people go. We forget that part. So this worshiping, this centrality of worship, of Sabbath, it's holy rest, but it's gathering to worship God. And when you are in mourning, the first thing the people of God love to do when they're in mourning is not go to church. And we've got our dear brothers and sisters in the Jewish faith saying, you mourning, you go to church. You go to church like you've never gone to church before. You go every day if you can. And you're required to go. So, okay, we'll get back.
Can I just say one thing about that, though?
Yes, go.
You know, the Kaddish is a prayer for the dead, but it's praise to God. It says nothing about your grief or the dead, that they're gone. It praises God.
It praises God.
That's what Kaddish is.
It is. I know. It comes in it. Okay, that's good. That's very good, because I'm trying to remember what book this is, but I can remember this conversation with Rabbi Amy when she came over to her house and she was quoting this. You're gonna be able to answer this. This wonderful book where they bring God, they bring God to court for all the tough things God has done, and they're blaming God for all the tough stuff. And in the end, they finally decide, the jury decides God is guilty.
Mm-hmm. God on trial.
What's it?
Is it God on trial?
Yes, that's it. And it's, who is it by?
Hillary Duff.
Okay, I thought it was Elie Wiesel. Okay, so I haven't read this, so I'm really faking my way through. This is Rabbi Amy telling me this, and I'm trying to remember it. But in the end, the judge is about to pronounce judgment, and it's reminded at that point, it might be the judge, it's time to worship. So the judgment doesn't happen. It's time to worship, which I think comes back to this standing up and praising God, staying in relationship in the midst of. And yet we have, and yet we have these texts in which the lament is profound.
Right, right. And then praising God doesn't negate our grief. Like you said, you need to be there. You need to be worshiping, and you can even tell God, I'm really glad that you are. Really, you know, and then but still have that praise.
Well, one of my most profound memories, and I don't know, I didn't get permission to tell this, I'm just going to tell it anyway, but when we were at the day of the memorial service for Ben, and we're gathered in the recital hall at Luther College, we're getting ready to walk out for the memorial service, and Renee had just seen pictures of the suffering in Haiti that morning, and so she was really struggling, and she's not Norwegian. And so she was crying out loud, and then just like this, which is kind of my amazing daughter-in-law who amazes me all the time, she just says, "It's time for worship," and we all get up and start walking out too. I want Jesus to walk with me. But it's just almost that kind of thing that's going on. You have people lament, they're at the anniversary of lamenting, they're mourning for a year, and they stand in the midst of it and sing praise. We stay in, you know, I think it's truly, if I'm going to go with Ben here, it's grace. So God is staying in relationship with us, but we stand in that walking with God. Okay, I'm sorry, let's run here. Where are we?
April.
Okay, yes. Right here.
I wanted to say, kind of taking us out of that joyful place we just were, you know, the sanctuary being destroyed, everything, the palace is being destroyed. When you live through a natural disaster,
like a tornado that takes
everything
your home.
Is destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so you don't recognize it. And so I know the people of Haiti that were there and Jonathan and Renee.
Your markers are gone. You come out, there are no trees or homes or streets or my sister Beth, who lived through a tornado that destroyed their neighborhood, a neighbor came home who had missed the tornado and he couldn't find his house. And I think he went into a pretty severe depression or something, as I remember that story, but he could not find his house. And that's just nothing compared to Haiti. I can't get my head around that. Okay, very helpful, thank you. I don't know where we are, is it 8, did you say? We gotta try to get through 8.
Chapter 8.
Let me get through this chapter here. Okay.
The Lord determined to lay and wounds the wrong of the daughter of Zion. He marked it off by the line. He restrained not his hand from destroying. He caused rampart and wall to lament. They languish together.
Even the walls are crying. Even the buildings are crying. Yeah, keep going.
Her gates have sunk into the ground. He has ruined and broken her bars. Her king and princes are among the nations. Guidance is no more. And her prophets obtain no vision from the Lord.
I'm just going to stop for 1 second on this one. And that is 1 Samuel 3:1. Do you remember what 1 Samuel 3:1 says? It is, I'm just going to read it really fast here. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord under Eli. The word of the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were not widespread. And what did we just have read here about no vision from the Lord? I mean, this is, we have bottomed out here. Everything we have known, everything that we have trusted is gone. And we don't even have any vision left. I mean, that's taken away hope.
Okay, keep going. Verse 10. The elders of daughter Zion sit on the ground in silence. They have thrown dust on their heads and put on sackcloth. The young girls of Jerusalem have bowed their heads to the ground.
I'm just going to say before you read 11 that something happens here in verse 11, and the narrator starts to talk about what this is doing to him. First of all, we have this change because he's no longer impassioned. And then he starts to care. And then he starts to really notice and not blame the victim in a sense. And then in verse 11, he starts talking about what's going on with him. So here we go. 11.
Verse 11. My eyes are spent with weeping. My soul is in turmoil. My heart is put out in grief because of the destruction of the daughter of my people, because infants and babes fed in the street of the city.
Verse 12.
They say to their mothers, where is bread and wine? As they faint like the wounded in the streets of the city, as the lives ebb away in their mother's womb.
Verse 13. What thing shall I take of witness for thee? What thing shall I link of thee, O daughter of Israel, Jerusalem? What shall I equal to thee that I may comfort thee, O virgin daughter of Israel of Zion? For thee praise is great like the sea. Who can heal thee?
You know, maybe if we could just take a verse, maybe we would just wrap our arms around this verse. There are no words to express this. The narrator says, there are no words. Your sorrow is as vast as the sea. Okay, let's keep going.
Verse 14. Your prophets have seen for you false and deceptive visions. You have not exposed your iniquity to restore your fortunes, but have seen oracles for you that are false and misleading.
And this is such a hard word for everybody who is in leadership, in any role in your life. When we do not dare help the people see what they need to see. And this is so very serious, this phrase about the leaders. Keep going.
15. All who pass along the way clap their hands at you. They hiss and wag their heads at daughter Jerusalem. Is this the city that was called the perfection of beauty, the joy of all the earth?
All your enemies open mouths against you. They hiss, they gnash their teeth, they cry, we have devoured her. Ah, this is the day we longed for. At last we have seen it.
Keep going. The Lord has done what he proposed. He has carried out his threat. He ordained, as he ordained long ago, he has demolished without pity. He has made you, the enemy, rejoice over you and exalted the might of your foes.
He has demolished without pity.
Now the narrator's words to the daughter of Zion, starting the next verse, 18.
Cry aloud to the Lord, O wall of daughter Zion. Let tears stream down like a torrent day and night. Give yourself no rest, your eyes no respite.
Arise, cry out in the night. In the beginning of the watches, pour out thine heart like water before the face of the Lord. Lift up thy hands towards him for the life of thy young children that faint for hunger in the top of every street.
See, O Lord, and consider, to whom have you done this? Should the women eat their offspring, the children they have cuddled? Should the priest and prophet be slain in the sanctuary of the Lord?
Young and old lie on the ground in the streets. My virgins and my young men have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered and not pitied.
You invited my enemies from around, all around the world as if for a day of festival. And on the day of the anger of the Lord, no one escaped or survived. Those whom I bore and reared, my enemy has destroyed.
It's so bad. God, you've killed kids. You have murdered children. That's what we're left with. The end of the second chapter. We didn't get to three. We'll get to three tomorrow. But if you would, can you do one thing today? And that is choose someone. Just have a, this is a homework assignment. Just choose someone and share with them one deep mourning moment in your life. And all that the other one does is listen. No advice, no fixing. Don't start worrying about this person and thinking you're going to go into a massive depression. Just listen. Just be, you can weep. You can do what Raphael did for Judd and April. You can weep if you want, but just to listen. Pick someone, and they listen to you, and you can either reverse it or you can find someone else, and you listen for them. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it back and forth with the same person. Would you do that? Are you willing to do that? Shake your heads no if you're not willing to do that. Okay, let's do that in the next 24 hours. Thank you very much. Whoops, we're going to sing the Lamb of God. Mary's going to leave us. She's not going to leave us alone here. I didn't see her at the beginning. So come up and...